Okay, I'm going to call the meeting to order of the Range Task Force. It's August 7th at 1:15 in the Sierra Room. Tamara, may I have a roll call and determination of quorum, please?
Jefferson Bagwell.
Here.
Vice Chair Fontanez.
Here.
Member Bonkowski.
Here.
Member Blackwood.
Here.
Member Cooley.
Here.
Member Gerlani.
Here.
Member Hillis.
Here.
Member Howell.
Here.
Member Keller.
Here.
Member Robinson. Member Tussey.
Here.
A quorum's present.
Okay, public comments. Members of the public who wish to address the Range Task Force may come forward and speak on matters related to the task force. Comments are limited to 3 minutes per person. If your item requires an extended discussion or action, please let me know so we can schedule it for another future meeting. No action may be taken on a matter raised under this item of the agenda until the matter itself has been specifically included on an agenda as an item for which we may take action. As a reminder to everyone, please direct all your comments to the chair so that we can properly respond. So all of your comments are to be directed to the chair. And then just before we get started today, I wanted to remind everyone that it is the goal of this committee and the Board of Supervisors to get the range open as soon as possible. So I just want to put that on the record. That is the goal of this task force and the Board of Supervisors. So thank you. So is there any public that would like to comment? Please state your name for the record.
I guess I was supposed to bring this up with me, too. For the record, this is Dave Navarro, Parks Operations Superintendent for the Carson City Parks, Recreation, and Open Space. I wanted to take an opportunity here at the Board of, Madam Chair and committee members. I just wanted to take this opportunity in the July 18th Board of Supervisors, meeting. There was a proclamation claimed that the month of July would be proclaimed Parks, Rec, and Open Space month. At that meeting as well, it gave us an opportunity to thank all the volunteers who put in time and effort to provide services in our park, and it also gave us an opportunity to thank the donors as well. Unfortunately, I left out one donor at that meeting, and I want to take the opportunity now, and I think this is a good opportunity to thank that, the group and the organization. Without further ado, I guess I would like to read this. This is a certificate of appreciation and recognition for your service and dedication on behalf of the Carson City, the Board of Supervisors, and the Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Department. We would like to thank the Carson Rifle and Pistol Club for your generous contributions to the city's park systems over the past year. We truly appreciate all that you do for the department and for you continuing to be advocates for the quality of life in our community. And I just wanted to break down their contributions this past year. They gave us two contributions. One was a $3,000 that went towards range safety improvements, and the other a contribution was $1,000 that went towards Ross Gold Park. So if I can have the representative, I think Chris Carver is here, and he's the current president of the Carson Rifle and Pistol Club. I would just like to say on behalf of the Parks Department, thanks to the club for all their support.
Thank you, Mr. Navarro. Okay, is there any further? Yeah, that's a good clap. Okay. Is there any further public comment? Okay, then we're going to move on to agenda item one, is the approval of the minutes. Has everyone had a chance to read the minutes? Are there any modifications? Okay, then I'll accept a motion for the approval of the minutes.
Move approval of the minutes.
Is there a second?
Second.
There's a motion and a second to approve the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? One abstention by Ms. Howell. Thank you. Ms. Budge, are there any modifications to the agenda?
No modifications.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to go on to item 3A for possible action, which is discussion and possible recommendations to the Park and Rec Commission and or the Board of Supervisors regarding the proposed Carson Rifle and Pistol Range fee schedule. Ms. Budge?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jennifer Budge, Parks and Recreation Director. This is a continuation from our last meeting. We had some direction from the task force back in April with what they would like to see in a draft fee schedule. So we brought a draft for you, and we also conducted a really brief market analysis of ranges in the area and provided those fees for you as well. We had a very robust discussion. I think everybody in the room had a different opinion. We tried to capture everything we could. We rewatched the meeting and tried to put it in the enclosed draft for you. Nothing is final. Nothing has been approved. We want to just have this discussion with you. And then if we can get some consensus, perhaps we could consider a future motion for the Board of Supervisors. So I think that's pretty much it. I don't know if you want to spearhead the next part of the discussion. Okay.
So if you look at the proposed fee schedule, has everybody got that? I thought maybe we could just start even just quickly going around from the members here if there's anything that you think should be adjusted on the schedule. As Ms. Budge indicated, we had quite a lengthy discussion at the last meeting, so hopefully we captured most of the thought processes, but in case there's something that stands out, and then we can then open it up for a much wider group. So, Mr. Tussey, was there anything on the proposed fee schedule that caught your eye that we should highlight and bring out for discussion?
I was looking at this, and of course, your eyes start to and say we put together something that's $5 or anything like that.
Right.
Who's taken? We had some comments early on about the fact that we're volunteers and we're not.
Please turn your microphone on. It has to turn green, and there it's on. Thank you.
The volunteers couldn't be depended on to show up. I don't know whether that's been a problem or not, because I haven't gotten down there to find out. So if you said, okay, you're the range officer, I need $5. I guarantee you we'll have plenty of people going in there to collect $5. There's pubs in England that have two sides to them, an expensive side and a cheap side. And the difference is one penny. And yet it separates the people.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just wondering if, do we authorize instructors to collect $5 a head? And if he does, what does he do with it?
Mm-hmm.
Give it to Jennifer?
So we have the two pieces that are recommended in the fee schedule. One is the $5 for the individual shooter, and we talked about we've designed those envelopes, and they'll put them in the Iron Rangers. That's a self policing activity. And then when we get down into the vendor schedules, you're correct that the particular instructor would collect that fee and turn it in to the park office with their information that they're going to do. So I'm going to instruct and have a CCW class, and eight people came, and I'm going to pay that fee. So that's an internal thing that we can work out on forms,
Madam,
when they sign up to get that type of stuff.
Madam Chair, if I might, Jennifer Budge, Parks and Recreation Director. So for the classes, anything besides that drop-in public use, we have a system already in place. It's called ActiveNet. So most of that will be conducted online. Whether you're purchasing your annual permit or you're signing up for a class, unless it's an independent contractor agreement, and that would be a separate document, and that would discuss a fee schedule, most of this would be online. So there really wouldn't have to be that significant cash handling other than the drop-in use, which would be an envelope or similar process, which was directed by this board, just like state parks do. When you go down to Washoe Lake, you put your money in your envelope and you get a little thing and it hangs on the car so that you know that that person is paid for the day.
Just like I said, Jennifer gets the money.
All the money is going to go back into the facility.
Thank you. Mr. Schutte, is there anything that you believe we should bring out and highlight or discuss?
I don't have any comments on it.
Okay. How about Mr. Blackwood, something, anything on there?
Is the annual pass, vehicle pass?
We talked about that they would be designed somewhat like a handicap placard.
So it is a vehicle. The reason mm-hmm. I was asking that is, go ahead, Jennifer, sorry.
I'm sorry. So that's a great question. We had a really robust conversation about that. Last time it was per vehicle in the proposed draft. In watching back the meeting minutes, there were more people that felt per shooter was more appropriate because it acknowledged that individual responsibility as well as it could increase the revenue stream. So the one that's proposed in front of you says per shooter, but we can definitely discuss that if you don't like that direction.
Seemed to me like it'd make more sense if what we're doing is allowing a vehicle pass, because if it's an individual pass, what's the guy going to do? Wear a lanyard around his neck that shows he's got his little pass on? So I think it ought to be a vehicle pass, because if we do that, then we don't need a youth category, because if Junior's going to come out and shoot, he can use his dad's pass. And also, you can load your quad pickup up with 10 guys and bring them out, and all shoot on that one pass. Seems to me like it makes more sense. Also, I think that there ought to be a fee, even if the competition shooters or the club shooters have an annual pass. I still think they should pay the daily fee as part of their fee to shoot in the event. And the same thing ought to be for CCW, training classes, whatever. So if we're going to charge $4 a shooter, let me clarify that. Gun clubs or club activities, everybody pays a fee. Every shooter pays a fee, $4. CCW, training classes, everybody pays a fee, $4. No other expense to the organization that's putting that on.
So to clarify your comment, I think I got a little confused. Are you saying that you want no differentiation between a nonprofit and a commercial user?
Doesn't make sense, so.
Okay, I just want to make sure that
because
we're on
we
the
want
same.
Everybody to show up and shoot, and we, no sense in overcomplicating the system. So any organized entity, the fee ought to be the same, in my opinion, and that would be a per unit per day, which, as you said, can be collected online when they sign up. Now, there may be some variation because a lot of the shooting clubs aren't going to know whether they're going to have 10 or 50 shooters show up, so we'll just have to assume that they are honest and noble people and will pay the proper fees. But that does away with a lot of the other categories and to be simplifies things.
Thank you, Mr. Blackwood. Mr. Cooley, did anything strike you out that we need to discuss specifically?
No, I didn't have any comments. I thought everything looked fine.
Okay. We'll go down to the end of the table. How about you, Mr. Girolani?
What's the how are we going to defend or define the 50% or greater disability for veterans?
They have it on their veterans card. It does it just like we do for property tax or other. We already have that mechanism in place.
Okay, and you think we should change that or delete that 50% or just make a veterans period?
What do you mean?
Any veteran would be.
We're trying to. We can talk about that. I can bring that up because what I'm going to do after we go through this, then we're going to take each of the discussion items and try and have a vote on that item that one of you. So you would like to discuss veterans, okay?
And additionally, I thought we had a category in there for out of state.
We did out of county. We just made it all in county, out of county. If you look to the far right,
I see
on the
that.
Schedule.
Originally, back in April, we had a out of state people would be paying significantly more, and that way, Lyon County, for example, who is adjacent to the range, wouldn't be paying the same as somebody who's coming from California. I don't think that's fair for those people who the neighbors to the range who use it quite often.
So, thank you. I'll put that as a discussion item. Mr. Hillett? Oh, did you have another?
Yeah, just item? A couple more, Lori, actually. So, to increase in adults from 50 to 75 to compensate for those categories that we deleted?
I think I'm misunderstanding the question.
Originally, we had it at $50 annual pass for Nevada residents. Now we're up to $75.
We went through all the discussion points that occurred at the last meeting and put this together with what we thought was the most consensus. We can vote today to change anything we want on this schedule, but you can see what we did is put the in-county answer versus the anybody that doesn't live in Carson City at twice the answer. I mean, we were trying to have a rationale for our decision. So is it three quarters of the rate? Is it double the rate? Is it triple the rate? And if we want to add an out-of-state rate, we could add another answer. So all of the items are subject for discussion. We just thought we should start with a rationale. Like you can see, the passes are at 15 times. So we were just trying to have a symmetry to the discussion, but everything is open.
Okay.
Mr. Hillis, did you have any particular item you want to bring up for discussion?
Yes, actually, I do. So I'll not to disagree with individuals, but the points I have concern on are I did believe that we had an out of state, so it can be discussed.
Okay.
I was under the understanding that the adult pass was $50 a year, so that's the second thing. When it comes down to volunteers, requires a minimum of 8 hours of service. Currently,
40.
To make a reservation, if you're volunteering as an RSO to maintain that the range stay open, it is required that they volunteer 8 hours per quarter with an initial minimum to start that. I would rather bring that more in line, because if you look at 8 hours, even at $5 an hour, which isn't even minimum wage now, that's $40 to gain a $5 pass. I would recommend that
a $75 pass.
Or $75, yeah, I'm sorry. Is it for an individual day? I don't understand exactly how the volunteers would work. So I think that needs to be defined. Is it if they volunteer 8 hours, they get 1 month or they get 1 year worth of access? So
they're going to get the year. But if you look at the bottom, it's after they've completed 40 hours.
Right.
Then they get the next year's pass.
It's a considerable amount of time to devote to get something that's valued now at $75. I would recommend that we look at revising that.
Okay, we can discuss that.
All right. Nonprofits, again, some of the nonprofits that are out there, the Carson Michael Pizza Club being one, as we were just recognized, have donated a lot of time toward maintaining the range to be open. Is there something in there for as a benefit of the club coming back or reducing the requirement of $4 a minimum, you know, per day per shooter? Addition to that, we have out-of-county members, so they're going to be charged at a different rate. But if you're at a club member at a club event, I would recommend that amount be maintained to be the same. I mean, the whole point is to promote shooting activities and shooting sports.
Okay.
And I think that is the last of my comments, other than also the minimum 10 per day. There are occasions where we don't have a minimum of 10 shooters show up to an event. We still put it on, but we'll have to pay for bodies who aren't there.
And I think that's a good discussion point that we all need to have as this group, because remember, we're taking that out of the public's right to use it.
Understood.
And so I just want to let you know the reason for the 10 minimum was to say we're not going to take it out of public use for 2, 3, 4 people. I mean, that was the reason behind the methodology. Again, we can discuss it as a group and say, is that valid?
Understood.
Or not, but that's the
reason. And I would agree with you. I would not
take it out of
expect to take it out of the public hands. However, proportionally, if only 5 shooters show up, that actually reduces the amount of lanes required when you're actually holding that event. So if the
but you've already reserved it. So anyway, we can talk about that.
Thank you.
Sure. Nick?
Nick Montanez for the record. I have no comment on this at the moment.
Sure. Okay. Steve?
Steve Robinson. Good. I'm good with it.
Okay. Any other ones you want to bring up, Brad, for us to go through?
Yeah, it sounds like the members have a pretty good handle, you know, and there's several items that they want to discuss, and since I'll be voting this on this at the board level, I'd rather have the other members.
Okay. Ms. Howell?
Carol Howell, yes. I'd like to get some clarification. There's a couple of points here that don't actually apply. Concessions and sales. Mm-hmm. Are we making this too complicated since we don't have a concession stand? If we ever do, then we can get into charging for targets, ear protection, eye protection, that sort of thing. It's not for sale, so I think it's confusing the issue here.
Ms. Budge, we had a rationale for this, too. Go ahead, Ms.
Thank
Budge.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jennifer Budge, Parks and Recreation Director. So there was a robust discussion on this as well. There's been a lot of comments that there aren't targets available, there's not ear protection when people show up, and they don't have the basic tools to use what they need when they shoot out there. So once we have a staff person there, we've already talked to QuickSpace, they're going to provide us a container so we can store things. We'll be able to provide that service. We're not exactly sure how that's going to go. It could be an outside vendor. And so I just wanted to have something on the fee schedule so I don't have to run to the Board of Supervisors to get fees authorized. And I wanted to try to anticipate any fees potentially that we might have. So it would be very similar, like at Washoe County, I forgot my ear protection. I can pick something up. Or we're not going to be selling any ammunition or anything like that. But just some basic things so they can be safe and have the right tools that they need to do to be able to shoot safely.
Okay, thank you. Was there any other items, Ms. Howell?
I have an issue with that, but we'll let it
wait
go
till
until
we
get to each point.
Thank you. Mr. Keller, did you have anything on the fee schedule you think we need to bring out for specific discussion?
I'm just struggling a little bit with the in-county and out-of-county pricing and the it's twice as expensive for somebody that could live, you know, basically closer to the range than maybe that somebody lives in the county. Because a lot of the grant funding that we get comes from on a statewide basis. So to narrow that all the way down to one county, which is a fairly small county surrounded by some pretty big populations, that's where I'm struggling with.
We can talk about that because, again, we were basing that on the fact that the out-of-county did not pay any property taxes or anything to actually support the range. They may purchase items that are part of a tax or something that goes into it, but they don't actually pay any of the costs for staffing or maintenance or groundwork or anything else. Only Carson City residents pay for that. So that was the rationale for the two differences, but we can bring that back into full discussion. Was that the only thing?
This time, yes.
All right, then what I'd like to do is we'll then take the items that each of you brought up, and Mr. Tussey, did you want to?
Yeah, I had a point. We have at least four people coming the other side. We have people that come pick up their pistols and go down to the range. We have people that come strictly for shooting. They stop off for a restaurant. So there's a lot of people coming from out of state in. I mean, a lot, I say. I haven't stood out there in Canada, but we get, every weekend we get people coming in to use our services.
So let's start then with, I think, the largest item and see if we can get that into consensus. So right now we have...
Before we get into this, could I ask you and Jennifer to maybe give us and the public a general idea of where the money comes from that supports the range right now?
From the city budget, from the general fund. And some federal funds when we get grants. It just
Jennifer Budge, Parks and Recreation Director. The improvements to the range have come from multiple funding sources. The Quality of Life Initiative, a lot of Nevada Department of Wildlife grants. We've had private donations. You name it, we've had a lot. There is no specific line item in the Parks Department budget, though, for the rifle range. So the staff that goes out there for park maintenance or to clean the restroom or anything is from our general budget. And our general staff budget for park maintenance comes either from the general fund or quality of life. But as far as improvements, there's not really a lot of taxpayer dollars that have gone into the improvements of that land. It's typically from either the sales tax, which is the quality of life initiative, or from grant funding. So the position that the city has approved and the board has created a lot of investment moving forward into the range. The range master position, it'll be a range coordinator position I'll talk about under my director's report, is entirely funded by the city's general fund. The $250,000 that's identified for capital improvements that will hopefully be a match for future grants and improvements comes from two separate areas, but one of them is the capital improvement fund, which is from general fund. So it's a myriad of funding sources.
Okay. So we're going to get started and say, so right now we have two columns, in-county, out-of-county, and I'm hearing that some would like to see out-of-state. So maybe just in general, let's discuss that first because I think it'll set off all our other discussions for alignment. So do we really feel that we need to distinguish between out-of-county and out-of-state? Somebody want to?
Madam Chair?
Yes? Am I getting a?
Madam Chair? Yes. Why don't we just go around and ask all the members whether they would prefer in and out-of-county or in and out-of-state?
Get rid of out-of-county. That's fine. Mr. Tussey, did you want to eliminate? I don't think in-county and out-of-state. That means there's no out-of-county? That doesn't work?
No, it would be in-state, out-of-state.
Oh, in-state, not in-county. Sorry. Sure. You want to just make an in? So somebody from Las Vegas gets the same rate as a Carson under that scenario. Someone from Clark County would get the same answer as somebody from Carson City versus you lived out-of-state. So what are your thoughts, Mr. Tussey?
Goodness, sick head of here.
We can come back to you if you want to think about it for a moment.
Yeah, well, it looks to me like anything we can do to make it simple is not going to be much money, really. But I think you should just have the two things, maybe. Saying you live here and shoot here. The problem with that is I'm not sure that everybody that shoots here, you could divide them that easily. So this is a relatively small city. So by comparison to the people that got shoved out of their gun range.
Okay. So you prefer in-state, out-of-state?
I prefer it to be the same.
Okay. Steve, do you have a preference?
To simplify it, I think we're overcomplicating it a bit, especially if we don't know if the range is going to be manned, because if it's not manned, we're on the honor system, and we all know how the honor system goes. So that being the case, to make it simple, just either you're in Carson City or you're not in Carson City. That's how I feel.
The way it's written.
It's either, you either live in Carson City or you're not in Carson City, and you pay that just different.
So you like the way it's written.
Right. If we can enforce it.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Blackwood, your preference?
I think that everybody that lives in the state of Nevada should be able to shoot the range at the same price. Anybody that comes in from out of state would get a different price.
So you're in favor of changing out of county to out of state and in county to,
Because the guys in Lyon County are, what, 3/4 of a mile from the gun range? And for them to cross over the hill and suddenly have to pay a higher fee because they live on the other side of the county line doesn't seem right to me. So I, and also we're wanting to encourage people to use a range, because of the collateral damage as a result of them shooting elsewhere. We also don't want to alienate a bunch of people. We want to enjoy it, and besides that, we might make a little extra money.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Cooley, do you have a preference?
Yeah, I like it the way it's written.
It was written. Ooh, we're 2-2 so far. We're doing good. Okay. Mr. Giuliani?
I'm actually inclined to go along with what Mr. Blackwood said.
Change it to in-state out?
I just don't think that it's fair for people to live a close distance to the range just because they have that imaginary line out there of a county that they should have to pay more. But definitely the people that come in from California, they should pay a significant amount more.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Hillis?
I like the way it's written.
As written,
I believe that the Carson City residents in their property tax, we're going to be submitting a larger portion of the funding to that. So,
thank you. Nick?
Nick Montanez, for the record. I'm going to say in-state, out-of-state, only because there are several funds funding this range, including some coming from Endow. You either paid the Nevada state taxes or you didn't. So,
thank you. Mr. Robinson?
Yeah, I'd go with Nevadans category and others.
Mr. Bronkowski?
Yeah, in-state and out-of-state, I think that when we look at grant funding from Endow, we just heard that it's problematic if you just restrict it to Carson City, and our long-range plan is to do more of a regional facility that's going to be shared by Lyon County and Carson City. So then you're going to charge Lyon County members who are actually participating at that point.
All right. Mr. Keller, I think I already heard you wanted in-state, out-of-state, but correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I was more concerned with the in-county, out-of-county. And now looking at it a little bit closer, I think that if we, the individual passes, were the in-county only, and then when you look more towards the commercial side or the reservation side, maybe making that where it's a little more expensive for the out-of-county folks to come in and use the range, then I'd probably be okay with that.
Okay.
So the ones that are making money off of using the range, they have to pay a little bit more to come, but not necessarily just
the regular
me and my buddy that, you know,
the day.
I might live in Carson, yeah, and he wants to come down and shoot with me. He has to pay twice as much as me to come shoot with me for the morning.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Michelle?
Well, I'm going to complicate it a bit. I agree, out of state. I would think that in county, there is a difference. It's not an imaginary line. We pay taxes in our city department maintains that. People that live outside of Carson City aren't contributing to the maintenance through property tax. So I think it's fair for them to pay a couple of dollars more. I would suggest the 5-7-10. Let somebody coming from California pay $10 and out of county $7 and residents $5. 5, 7, and 10. So I'm sorry, I'm complicating it a bit.
Yeah, we're not getting to the easier. So let's try something here.
Madam Chairman, before we proceed, I just have one question. If we separate by county, how are you going to police it?
All of this is by the people just being honest.
Well, but still, why have it? Because unless you walk up and say, show me your driver's license number and tell me what your zip code is, we have no way to police it. I mean, if a guy's got a Nevada license plate on his pickup truck, you don't know if he's from Elko or Carson City. You can't police it.
I get that. Let me try something here before we get into a long discussion. Trying to cobble through what everyone has had to say. If we were to break this down into something different and start with line one on the public shooters, and we did in-state $5 per shooter because everybody has a Nevada license plate that's on the car, and you're not going to know, And again, I don't see a ranger. I agree with him. A ranger's not going to walk up and say, let me see your driver's license. So if it's a Nevada plate, it's the $5 answer, and then you change it to out of, the trick is, so you could do in-state $5, out-of-state $10. Could we live with it? We're not going to get a consensus here, but we have to get the schedule done. And so my question is, let's just start with number one, just the guy driving up in the car, wants to shoot, he's going to pull out an envelope, he's going to say, there's four people in my car, and we're from Nevada, put my $20 in the envelope. I drove up and I'm from California or Texas or whatever, and I'm going to put $10 per shooter if I'm out of state.
Per vehicle, isn't it?
Well, right now it's per individual. Do you guys want it to be per car or per individual?
Per shooter.
I think we had the consensus last time it was individual, which is why we wrote it that way. So everybody okay with going in-state $5, out-of-state $10? Anybody have a problem? Okay, we're going to move off this line. You can book your one, that's fine. We got consensus, sorry. Now, on the individual passes, this is where you do have control because somebody does have an ID. I thought after kind of working on this, should we allow passes for out-of-state? We wouldn't even have passes for them. So we could have those remain as in-county, out-of-county, because that's the benefit. Well, they'll be out. They'd be out-of-county.
They could have an annual pass.
But so could the guy from Lyon County that we were talking about that doesn't pay taxes here. He would buy the more expensive pass. And that's what I'm trying. You see what I'm trying to say? The guy driving up, everybody's $5 if you have a Nevada
but
license.
But the Nevada resident is still paying their certain amount of taxes that goes right back to Endow, who is funding part of this.
Well, that's what I'm asking. What, you guys want to just do the same thing? You want to make it in-state, out-of-state for passes?
Nick Fontes, for the record. I think it should be in-state, out-of-state, just for that reason alone. There's probably a lot of hunters that may use our range that some of their contributions may have gone to improvements in the range, not necessarily maintaining the range. But, okay. I mean, some of their money's in there at some capacity.
So do we have consensus, not happiness, but do we have consensus then that it's the columns are in-state and out-of-state? Is that what I'm... We could live with it. Everybody could live. We could live with it. Okay, then we'll move on past that. So the column headings will be in-state and out-of-state. The next discussion item that I heard was on the veterans, whether it's the 50% or greater disability rating. That is what we use at our other park facilities. It is our common way that we do our property taxes that they get abatements on and their entry into everything else. So the rationale was to have this the same as we do and everything else we do in the city for veterans. But again, I'm open to discussion on
Madam
this.
Chair, I just have one question of clarification. Since we've moved on past item B, was the individual fee was not discussed. Is that open for discussion?
That's
as well?
Later. Okay. If we need just to. I'm doing them in the order of the ones we can knock off.
No problem.
And then we'll come to the final. Okay. So everybody will leave it. I'll just state that my preference is for the sake of the city staff that we have the same answer everywhere versus one part getting a different answer. And if the city were to change the swimming pool, the MAC, and all of those to 100% for any veteran, then we would likewise change this one. So, thoughts? So, Nick?
Nick Fontanez, for the record, I will agree with you in that sense to keep it consistent with city policy. And only for that reason, I think we can all get behind
everybody
veterans, does. But just to maintain
continuity.
Yes.
Okay, anybody? All right, then we'll move on through that. The next item of discussion centered around the nonprofit shooting clubs just being the flat doesn't necessarily going to be four, but that the answer is the same, so it's not. But I think an out-of-state nonprofit or an out-of-state shooting club is $6. Then if we're going to not, that we're consistent, thoughts there. So if I'm an out-of-state organization, even though I'm a nonprofit, if I'm from California, you okay with leaving it as the two different, everything is out-of-state is a different rate than the in-state?
I don't know.
They may have different members. I'm talking about the club itself, who's making the reservation.
The reservation fee that they would be charged?
For the $4 per shooter versus currently
six. If you have an out-of-state club that comes in to do it, probably a large number of the people participating are going to be Nevada residents. I think it's the club. Pardon me?
Yeah, this is aimed, what this is saying, it's the club making the reservation that's being assessed the per shooter fee. So just for clarity, that's what we're talking about. So if it's one of our local ladies gun clubs, the way this is reading, it's $4. But if it's a gun club from California, they would have to pay $6. That's the way this is written. Is everybody okay with, again, the out-of-staters have to pay more? We'll discuss the rates later. Okay. Everybody good? Let me see what the other. Now we'll get into, unless I've missed something, we did that. Okay, now we're into the rates themselves to see if we can come to consensus on the rates. Anybody have a problem then? $5 per shooter and then $10 for the out-of-state. So in-state 5, out-of-state 10. Everybody okay with the envelope? Yeah. Moving on. Okay. The passes. Currently we have it listed then as in-state is 75, out-of-state is 150 on the adults. Anyone want to suggest something different there? Mr. Tussey. Leave it at 75 and 150?
Well, no, we're going to have a bunch of money that hasn't got a place to go. And that usually means when it does go someplace, it isn't what we want.
Oh, no. This money is going to go to a line item for the range. Oh, no. Yeah, it's going to a line item for the range maintenance. Okay. Everybody okay with the 75, 150 to start? Oh, Mr.
Actually,
Hillis?
I would recommend that I thought in an earlier meeting that we had kind of looked at a cost of 50 and 100. I would recommend that it change back to that 50 and 100.
Thoughts? Again, we set this up as 15 times, means you'd go buy a pass instead of the envelope system. So do I have any, Mr. Hillis would like to change it. Anybody else want to change it, or do we want to leave it at the 75, 150?
I think 50 and 100 is more appropriate.
That's true.
With the pass, is there any limitations as to how often they can use the yearly pass?
For the year.
Well, I know, but 5 days a week?
Yep.
So anytime it's open.
Anytime it's open.
Then I wouldn't think that you would just multiply the single pass by an equivalent of 12 or whatever visits you think people are going to make out there on an average.
I don't think we have any statistics to help us in that arena at all. Like I said, we kind of set this up thinking, where would it be advantageous for a person to go buy the pass versus, and we kind of thought, okay, if they go 15 times a year, they'll go in and buy a pass. But so again, I like rationale for our decision, so it didn't look like we just picked a number out of our.
Madam Chairman, Bob Blackwood. We are moving from a no pay situation to a pay situation.
That's true.
So we just want to get them by the seat of the pants and give them a gentle tug. We don't want to grab them around the neck and strangle them. So we're already going to get a lot of opposition, and I fully agree that a fee system is necessary. People that shoot at the range need to support the range and its operation. And I'm hoping that, as just a side note, but I'm hoping that with all this effort that the Park and Rec Department will put a maintenance budget item to maintain this range, and that's where this money should go.
That's already planned, Mr. Blackwood.
I think we ought to ease into this. I mean, we have the choice of coming back. The Park and Rec Department, after we got this set up, can go set whatever fees they want to. So maybe 2 years and say 50 isn't enough. Let's go to 100.
Yeah, that's not quite. They don't get the beauty of just changing the fee schedule. It doesn't work quite that way. But so, Mr. Blackwood's in favor of 50 and 100. Do I have a consensus on that? Or the 75 or 50 or something else?
Hey, my preference would also be 50 and 100. I think that if we price it too high initially, then we're going to get a lot of people that continue to just go out into the desert and shoot, and we're not solving the problem of potential firefighters or wildfires and right and danger to the public.
Okay, so then Ms. Howell?
The 150, again, we're talking out of state. People aren't going to fuss about paying 150 over 100 for a yearly pass that they can come out and use any time that the range is open. And they're not contributing. They're taking away from now the Nevada residents that are living here and paying taxes from the people that are coming in from out of state. So if we eliminate a few of them coming in from out of state, so be it. That gives the residents of Nevada that much more opportunity to utilize the range.
So you're suggesting it could be 50 and 150?
50, 75, 150. We go out there more than 12 times a year. So 15, 20 times, it's going to pay me to do a yearly pass.
Yeah. Mr. Robinson, I think I saw your hand up.
I think the 50 and 100 is reasonable and understandable.
So let me have by just a show of consensus the 50 and 100. Could we support that? Okay, so 50 and 100 will do for adults. Then I'm going to assume we'll just obviously move down the line on the youth. Are you saying that's 25 and 50 then? We're like pushing that down?
Yes.
25 and 50. Anybody have a problem there? 25 and 50 for the youth. We already talked the veterans, 50% or greater is free. Then if we're going to do a family pass, you're saying that's going to be what, 75 and 150? Because we're changing the whole, right? Everybody okay with that? Okay, good. The volunteers is probably the next area for us to decide. What are we going to consider a volunteer? How much time do they have to work to get their annual pass? Right now, we have recommended that we're saying it's 8 hours of service per month. So to be considered a range volunteer, and that once they've completed 40 hours, because what you talked about earlier, how you're going to police that, well, they'll have done their 40 hours. At least we know we got that before we gave them an annual pass. Any other comments, though, or other thoughts or suggestions in the volunteer arena?
Madam Chair,
Mr. Hillis?
Just looking at the amount of hours necessary, if you had 40 hours at and then 8 hours per month, you're talking 96 hours per year to maintain that, which comes out to about 4 cents an hour. I think their time is worth a little more than that. I would recommend bringing it in line to 16 hours minimum to initiate the pass, and then 8 hours per quarter to maintain it. Because I want to show the volunteers that we do appreciate their time out there.
Okay. Do I have any comment from anyone else?
Yeah, hard nose here. Volunteer okay. Means you don't get paid. You go out and you do something, you work on something for the betterment of that property. You're not expecting payment. So you've got to, you're going to have to define volunteer. I'm the range safety officer when we go out and shoot. Am I a volunteer then for the range? Since I'm the range safety officer, who's going to categorize all of these volunteers? Just a question.
I would recommend that, my understanding is that Carson City already has a volunteer program. I would recommend that those RSOs willing to volunteer toward the time out there become registered with the city, and that hours that they're logging would be maintained, I believe, by Parks and Recreation. Is that correct? I could be wrong on that point.
Thank you, Jennifer Budge, Parks and Recreation Director. We do have a volunteer program in place. We have waivers that volunteers sign for whatever capacity that they're serving in. This was designed so not everybody can be an RSO, not everybody wants to be an RSO, but we still need a lot of help, and whether that's from a maintenance perspective or they're helping build targets down the road or in whatever capacity, we want that all to count because they're putting their blood, sweat, and tears into that facility. So we want to reward them. And for the RSOs, they want to be able to shoot, and they have the hardest job. So we want them to be able to come out and use the facility and stay up on their skills as well. So that's that, and we can definitely track hours, and we can do all of that. We have a volunteer database. We currently have, we're in between right now, but we have typically an AmeriCorps VISTA volunteer coordinator for the department. Our new one will start again this fall because they have a year of service, and then there's a break before we replace them. So we'll have that person helping coordinate and manage that piece, so it won't be all on the range staff person to have to track that.
Ms. Budge, can I ask you the volunteers that work in any of the other services for the city, do they get any benefit? Is there any free time, any other benefit that accrues to any other volunteer in the city?
We do not have anything in place right now. There's nothing in the current fee resolution that's been approved by the board to benefit volunteers in any way. They're providing their service out of the goodness of their heart and helping us in a variety of areas, whether it's cleanups or Eagle Scouts building projects in parks. We don't have anything that helps them out. We do typically get donations, and we provide, you know, raffles and incentives and things like
thank yous.
But it's no cost to the city's budget, and it is basically thank yous and incentives to try to volunteer with us.
Okay. So do I have any general thoughts? Do you guys want to change it to 8 hours per quarter and 16 hours to be eligible? I don't want to, Mr. Hillis, I think it would be wrong to put an hourly wage or anything else to it because, again, it's volunteerism, and they are greatly appreciated. But I have to say I appreciate every volunteer in this city because we have them that build our trails. We have a lot of volunteers that put an immense amount of hours into this city, but I do want to show appreciation, and I do think that there is an element of this volunteerism that's a little higher order, and maybe they have to take a little more public, what's a kind word, consternation. And so I think it's okay that we build a little incentive into this one because it is just a little bit more difficult volunteer task.
And if I may, Madam Chair, to expand on that point, these RSOs are actually required to become NRA certified, and they're paying for those courses on their own. So, again, I think that bringing those requirements down. And to answer Mrs. Howell, she had a question. My feeling is, you know, if you're out there volunteering for a club organization as an RSO, you're assisting whoever the range master would be at that time by devoting your time to maintaining that organization's shoot or whatever is going on, which would lessen the stress on any other range officer that's out there. And so you may want to require, or you may want to look at that as being considered part of volunteering. I'll let you discuss that.
Mm-hmm. So do I have any consensus on 8 hours per quarter or per month? How many like quarter? Two like the quarter. How many like the month? Oh, Ms. Howell, you're on the winning side this time. Sorry, I'm just giving you a bet. We need a little levity in the room. Okay. So the 8 hours of service will be per month. Let's talk about, though, the other piece of to activate it. Right now we have it set at 40 hours before we actually issue the pass. And you had recommended 16. Any thought process on whether the 16, the 40, anything in between? Anybody have a...
Well, is that 16 a quarter or 16 a year?
No, they would complete that many hours before we issue the pass that's good for an hour. So that... We eliminate the problem of somebody saying, oh, I'm going to be a volunteer. They sign up, they do 0 hours, and you handed them the pass. They would already have to have how many hours before we give them the pass? What do you guys think?
16.
I'm going to think that maybe we could go ahead and go with the 16 on the issuing of the pass, because I think we have a whole bunch of wonderful RSOs that have proven to us that they're committed to the range, so... I don't see them backing out of being an RSO, and I'd rather have faith in them than not. But anybody have a problem if we go to 16 hours before for the eligibility? Okay, that's a half. So we'll change that 40 to 16. Now what's left? We went through the... Business commercial. We have on the schedule the 8 per shooter with the 10 minimum per day, or the choice. We have some contractors in town that prefer to get advertising on our websites. They don't want to worry about whether they have one shooter or two shooter, and so they enter into what we call independent contractor agreements. It's the same we have for throughout the city. They don't have to. They can go to the per shooter minimum. So what are your thoughts on the $8 per shooter with a minimum of 10?
I think the minimum of 10 is too high. The quantity, whether it's the value, the fee, whether it's $8 or $10, probably doesn't matter. But I think that because there's a lot of training classes that you, matter of fact, don't want 10 shooters. You want 5. So I think requiring a minimum of 10 is uncharacteristic for the kind of environment and the activities that we participate in.
Okay, because that's $80 that we're taking it. Again, I'd like us to concentrate on your taking that particular bay out of the public's right to use it. So... If this sits at $80, but suggesting it goes to $40.
But in order for somebody to do that, don't they have to have a city business license?
The commercial does, yes.
So anybody that said they have to have the insurance, they have to have a city license if they're going to put on a for-profit activity, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So they're bringing people into town to spend money in our town. And I think you could just charge them a flat fee, but requiring 10 or 15 or 20 is, I mean, you could do that, but all they're going to do is to pay the fee and only have 5 shooters. And you'll limit the number of people the number of training entities or special entities that will show up and use our facility. We're trying to encourage people to show up and use our facility, so we don't want to drive them away.
So are you saying you'd rather just say $50? A flat fee to take it.
There's three things that you could do. One of them is you could say, okay, in order to qualify to use our facility, you have to have a city business license. You have to have $1 million insurance liability thing, and then we're going to charge you $100 to use a bay or the rifle range, and then we're going to charge you $8 or $10 for every participant that you have. So that covers all the bases. You know, if they have a big class and they got 50 people that are going to show up, they're going to pay $10 a head for 50 people.
All I guess I'm sorry. I'm not tracking what you're recommending here. I'm having a hard time tracking to what you're recommending.
Let me start over. First off, you've got to have a city business license.
All businesses in Carson City doing business have to have a city business
license.
Right. That's correct.
And you have to have an insurance policy.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to have an RSO. Okay? Then, to make a reservation, we charge them a fee. $50, $100, $200, whatever it is, but a fee. Okay. And then on top of that, they would pay for however many customers that they have that take their class or participate in their activity.
Oh, we weren't recommending both a fee and a per shooter.
Well, but the thing that it does is it then negates the necessity of having a minimum number of shooters. You already got a fee up front.
Well, that's what I'm asking you. Do you guys want a set fee to take it out or a per shooter? That's the discussion. What do you think is more appropriate here? Yes, Michelle?
I don't understand why a shooter would go out and pay $8 to shoot for an hour and a half, because that's all the CCW classes are out there for, usually. Why not just keep it at the $5 per shooter for the class, but then a requirement of 5-6, whatever the average is for class, for the reservation?
Yeah, I think we are. I just think somehow you guys aren't tracking along here with us, but we're going to try something. Mr. Bonkowski?
Yes, I think the value is not on the number of participants. The value is on the bay and the time that it's out of use. And if I remember right, it's a four-hour limit. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
On the reservation, right, for the bay. So what's the value of a bay for 4 hours? And it should be a flat fee based on the value of that time.
Okay.
Because, frankly, it doesn't matter whether there's two people, ten people, or 100 people. It's the bay for 4 hours.
Right. So how much is that fee if we go to a flat fee for taking the bay out of the public's use?
I'm just going to throw a number out, maybe $50 per reservation. And then out of state would be just double that.
Consistent with our whole.
Right.
Is everybody okay with 50 and 100? Yes?
How would
Mr.
that work?
Cooley?
How would that work with the independent contractor agreements?
It's, again, their choice. Whichever one's going to be cheaper for them is what they're going to pick. I'm going to assume they're going to pick whichever's less expensive. I would. If $50 is cheaper than 30%. Ms. Budge?
Thank you. Jennifer Budge, Parks and Recreation Director. Well, if you get the $50 fee, let's say they would always pick the $50 fee because it'll always be cheaper.
Right.
I just want to clarify. So if I have a group that comes in, I want to make a group reservation, and I have 100 people, and it's going to be $50.
Per
reservation.
Per bay.
Per bay. So how do we want to handle that on the long range and the short range? So for the shooting bays, that's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're incorporating the other ranges into the fee schedule, I just want to see what you're feeling when we have a group reservation.
For the long range and the short?
For the, mm-hmm. yeah, for the, I want to consider the entire facility. So I'm not trying to direct the answer. It's just a question.
No, I agree. We've got $50 for a bay. What do you guys think for the short range or the?
I just wanted to point out, I think in a previous discussion, you know, we only allowed X number of lanes, for example, covered or uncovered on the long range to be available for a reservation at any one time. I thought it was set at a maximum of 50%.
That we would let be in reservation, unless we closed it for a fundraiser for the entire
once a year,
like we did for the
exclusion. Yeah, exactly. That's a separate issue.
So you think $50 fits for each because we're not going to let more than half of the range be reserved?
I guess it would be 20. On the long range, you have two separate ranges. You have a covered range and an uncovered range. They're roughly half and half. So you'd have one reservation available potentially for the covered, one reservation available for the uncovered. On the short range, the entire facility is covered. So then it would just, I guess, be half and half. I'm just tossing these ideas out there. Please, I want input from anybody else.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Al.
Can we open to comment? We've got two RSO. No, we can't?
No.
Okay.
If I open that, then I have to open. No. So you're saying that so we have $50 on a bay for the covered and the uncovered. What are you suggesting? I didn't hear the answers. 50 also? Is there any reason to do something different?
I think as long as you stay consistent with what we're doing already, that we've already set the tone, but I agree with Dave with you can't take the whole range. So 50% of what we have out there would be significant.
Okay. So $50, but no more than 50%, except for the director may have a special event once a year where we do the big annual fundraiser. So we may take it out with the direction of approval of the director to have a major fundraiser once a year if we want to. And that could close the whole range, but only once a year that we'd have a big.
Madam Chair, just a question. Maybe Jennifer knows the answer. Right now, how many covered lanes are there on the rifle range? So,
20 and 20.
So at any one time, it would be a 10-lane reservation, which would be 50% of either of those two facilities. Or I guess if an organization or they needed half covered, half, they could go from the first five lanes on one and the first five on the other. That would also accommodate them, but no more than 10 at any one time.
And I think, you know, if we made a reservation, we could make it very clear about, you know, which portion they have it. You have, you know, lanes one through five or, right. You know, whatever they need based on their event. I equate this to, like, the swimming pool. We have a swim team that uses the pool. They don't have exclusive use of the pool, so we always leave a couple lanes open for the public. So we always want to make sure that we provide a public opportunity. So I like the concept of that 50% because we're still providing an opportunity for the general public to shoot, which is why this facility was built in the first place. And then you're still be able to provide those specialty trainings that you need.
Okay. So we're all okay within the $50, no more than 50% in reservation.
Lori.
And then out of state is $100.
I'd just like to make one comment. I don't think it would be a good idea to allow a reservation that had five covered and five uncovered because then you're preventing potentially a whole nother reservation.
And a half of the 10.
Right. Yeah. So if somebody needs uncovered and covered, then they would need to have two reservations and take the 10 lanes of each.
Right. For clarification purposes, that'd be $100 because they're taking the 10 covered and the 10 uncovered because it's correct. Right? Everybody's understanding that? Yeah, because otherwise no one else could do it. Okay, the government use, we already, this is free cancellation fee, 15 days or less. We had 30. I think that's got to go to 25 since we lowered the other
Madam
fees.
Chairman, I would suggest gong the cancellation fee. If they blow it, they blow it. Because again, it's going to be tough to.
Then I don't give them another reservation. I mean, what's
that would be?
I'm saying?
Yeah,
one else got to reserve it because they blocked it and then they didn't use it.
But we see that all the time now, with people making reservations out there and not using the facilities. Okay, so I mean that's nothing. So what you would do is if somebody makes a reservation
months?
and they forfeit on it. When they come back for reservation the next time, you say, not this time.
So how much is the penalty time for they can't make another reservation if they cancel less than 15 days? I mean, if they cancel with 15 days notice, that
if they cancel
fine.
Within a set period of time, then, you know, that's fine. But you can't come out and blanket say, well, no, sorry, you did it last time. You can't do it this time. You can't do that.
Madam Chair.
Well, if there's a penalty for it, or if there's...
Make another reservation.
For so much time.
Yeah, for 30 days or something.
Or
a fee.
No.
If
Ms. L?
If there is a reservation that isn't occupied, the public's going to fill in on that. I mean, they're not going to leave that booth or that bay sitting there empty if nobody's there to use it.
I get that, but they took the reservation out, so you couldn't reserve it. I've had people already calling me all upset that somebody has everything reserved and they can't get a reservation. That's not right. We want it fair and equal access for people, and so either you charge them a fee or you say, okay, you're 60 days, you can't make a reservation. If you cancel appropriately, I don't have any problems, but I just don't think you should let people just keep reserving it. They never show up, and then you never got to get the Ladies Gun Club in there because the reservation was blocked.
Right. All right.
So,
Madam Chair,
what's the right answer, a fee or a time?
I like the time idea, but I would also point out that what if they have existing reservations pending? Are those reservations also canceled? It's just a point. I would imagine you would also cancel any future reservations until that time has passed.
What's the amount of time, if you guys like time versus money? How much time do you think is right to...
Oh, I think both. I think you assess them a fee and you tell them they can't make it for a certain amount of time.
Okay, what?
So what I'm hearing is that that trying to track and enforce a time penalty for reservations would be difficult on staff. So my feeling is that if somebody doesn't cancel appropriately, meaning in the last 15 days, that they forfeit the entire fee.
They just forfeit their fee.
They forfeit the entire
fee. It's not. It's that cancelable way, up to 15
that
days.
That way we're not out anything. They made the reservation, perfect. Whether they use it or not.
That works.
Yeah, that's the perfect answer.
So no refunds is actually, so it's really, if you cancel 15 days or less, there's no refunds is what you're saying. Mr. Keller?
What? Why wouldn't you just make the fee non-refundable?
In the first place.
You pay for the reservation, and if you don't show up, then you get out of, like, somebody made a whole bunch of reservations, but then they didn't fulfill them, and so another club couldn't fill it. The public came in and used it.
And we're making them pay at the time of the reservation.
The reservation, you just pay. And then...
Is it changeable? So I can't cancel it, but I can change the date?
If you want to make it more complicated.
I'm asking all of you. You want to make it, well.
Well, we also have some perpetual reservations, correct? For some, yeah. So how do we track that? You're going to make them pay for the next 5 years?
We don't give them perpetual like that anymore, Brad. That's what ends up. You don't. You can't say I get the first Saturday of every month for the next
right.
5 years.
So you'd have to put a limit on the number of reservations.
Mm-hmm. How long out we're going to go. Do you guys like no refunds? Or do you like no refunds within 15 days. Mr. Tessie?
You guys are just
mean. Not me. I only paid, put 30 on here, so don't look at me. That's right. Some things happen.
In the event, I'm sorry. Madam Chair, I think that the non-refundable after 15 days is just fine because, I mean, things happen. I mean, what if somebody couldn't make it for
something?
Any reason at all, yeah.
We can
not enough members
it.
Signed up
and
for the
see
event.
How it goes. Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair, I would imagine this would exclude events like rain, tornadoes.
Well, that's.
I mean, that's going to be
oh,
up
we
cancel to
it,
the
they
discretion.
Didn't do it. We did.
We would be canceling that
that's
on
correct.
Them, and then they
we
would just
canceled
reschedule.
It. That's different. Okay. How about how many are okay with if you don't cancel 15 days or less, no refund? Can we all live with it? It's not that. I know you want to be, well, to use Mr. Tessie's word, mean, but how about we compromise, not be too mean.
But clarify if the city cancels due to rain, snow, ice, wind.
No, if we close the range so that they cannot go there because there's some event or we end up having to do an emergency maintenance, we can't not refund their fee.
But
if we close it.
Right. But if it's raining outside.
We don't close the range.
Madam Chair, Jennifer Budge. So, of course, if we had a fire out there and
right.
someone couldn't have their event, we'd reschedule it. We'd make every
right.
effort to try
right.
to help them. But there's bad weather here every day. You wait 30 minutes. I lived here my whole life. Things always change. We wouldn't typically cancel for a weather-related event.
Right.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify that.
No, only if the city actually closes the facility, then we wouldn't certainly charge the people. Okay. Now, on the cleanup for special events, again, that was at the director's discretion. Everybody was okay with that. Gone. I didn't hear any problems there. I didn't hear any problems on the vendor. We had a discussion earlier on the concession. Again, that one was to allow for future in case we wanted to put things out there. If we wanted to open it up for private people to come in, we did it. Let's see, when we had that major fundraiser, can't remember who the vendor was that came out there. We had somebody that came, but anyway.
It was the machine gun company from
something. Reno.
But on this concession, I would have a problem with the city competing with our gun stores in selling eye protection, ammunition.
We're not going to sell.
You said you weren't going to sell, but targets, target stands, that type of thing. I think that you're getting into a competition with the business industry there.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Nick?
Nick Fontanez, for the record. The reason this all came up was because we are getting reports that people are showing up to the range without the necessary things to shoot. So they're showing up with a bag of golf balls and throwing them out on the dirt and taking pot shots at them, which is contributing to the ricochet problem. So if they had a target that they could shoot straight into and it would strike a backstop, that would be better. And we do have a local gun store that's close to the range, but people are still showing up without the necessary tools that you would need.
Well, isn't that why we're putting range officers out there, range safety officers, so that stops? I mean, that was the whole point, was the safety out there was so laxed and letting people do that. And now we've got a range safety officer on the job while the range is open and all the range safety officer volunteers. I mean, I've stopped a good number of people from shooting into sideburns, doing all kinds of things that they shouldn't be doing out there. Now we've got a range safety officer that's supposed to be out there when the range is open. So I just think this is not something we should be addressing at this point. Maybe future years from now when we put in a concession stand and you want to sell hot dogs and targets, you know, that's one thing.
Right.
But to get into this now,
I don't think this was aimed at that type of concession. I understood this to be more that we might have 20 targets on hand, and if you had an individual that we would have to ask to leave because they didn't have the right equipment, the right target, that the city staff would be authorized to say, hey, here's a proper target. Not that we're going to set up a concession booth. I'm not seeing us doing that at all. But here is a $5 paper target, and you can stay, but you have to reimburse us our actual cost of that target. So I saw it more as just the one-offs, you know, with the ability for us to, again, just be a good partner at the range. It would be lovely if we could have, so I don't know how much money someone would make as a full-out regular concession out there. That'd be something totally different, but... Mr. Tussey?
30 years ago, we had a range like this, and a range master. In addition, we had a piece of wood. You just took cut and just dropped them in, and he did it all day long. You learn bad that he can't function at 6,000 feet, because he not only made those targets, but he ran the range.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And also, ear protection is infinitesimal price.
Yeah.
Right.
They're really cheap.
Right.
Madam Chair, so, what if we threw that under the sponsorship issue? Like we're sponsoring the bays?
Oh, could sponsor.
Yeah, what if the businesses sponsored those
earplugs and targets?
Or targets. It's free advertisement, and, you know, it reflects back on the businesses. in the community.
Nick Fontanez, for the record, as far as I understood, we weren't trying to go into the business of selling targets here. We were just trying to keep it slight. Because if I showed up without the proper equipment and then I got booted because I didn't know, I would like just a simple paper. It doesn't even have to. We could print them off a copier. Mm-hmm. So.
Mm-hmm. We could raise the price to $10 a day, and everybody that shows up, you give them a set of earplugs, a pair of glasses, and a target.
It could get there. Okay. You look at the targets and the consent, it's just an actual cost, so there's no, but I don't think we'd be adverse to the idea if somebody wanted to sponsor them, then the actual cost would be zero because somebody gave them to the department to hand out. So the cost would be zero. Mr. Robinson?
Steve Robinson, I'm a little confused. You're talking about parks giving out targets and equipment or
the
private?
Ranger. No, the ranger is there and somebody doesn't have the right target or doesn't have an ear protection.
Sure.
Like you said, that's why it's just a cost item. We're not trying to make money. We're not setting up a concession. It's a safety, like you said. But I like somebody sponsoring them all. I do like that idea.
I'll make one final comment on this. The sponsorship does sound like a better opportunity for businesses in town, as well as we weren't going to give them really nice targets here or nothing. It's just what we were trying to do was promote safe shooting in the area. So if nothing else that they took home with them that you need to have a target when you're shooting.
Okay. So you're suggesting then that number 5 moves to be E, 7E, and it just says the actual cost of whatever the item is. I mean, they'll just donate the items is what you're saying. Do I have consensus that we would allow someone to sponsor paper targets or whatever? I mean, whatever the cost is for them to print their little logo on it, so be it.
Well, I think that's fine as long as you add language or also provide that if a business doesn't step up to sponsor, that then the city's going to provide it.
So we could leave 5, we could make 7E and leave 5 on there. That would be, both are just direct cost, but we would add the opportunity under 7E.
Right, the priority is for business to do it, and if nobody steps up, then we're still going to take care of range safety.
Actual cost. Okay. Is everybody okay with that? Okay.
Madam Chair, it's sort of already on there. If you look at 7C,
target stands, envelopes,
permits, etc. I mean, we could just expand on that.
Just expand the definition to include the other. Okay. I like that. Expand definition. Okay. Oh, my gosh. Did we do it? Is there any other outstanding thing you think we...
Just one. So if you go back up to, I made a comment on the cost for nonprofit and shooting clubs. If we're going to charge, if we've transitioned in B for commercial entities to go to a lane basis, why don't we just make nonprofits and shooting clubs half of what that is? So if it's $50 per 10 lanes, then it's going to be $25 for nonprofits and organizations.
Just do half because we want to get rid of the minimum.
That way you can get rid of the minimum shooter.
Can you repeat that again?
So the nonprofit shooting clubs in-state would be $25 instead of $50 for the commercials, $25 for the nonprofits. The out-of-states would go to $50.
That is correct, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Is everybody okay with that? We just got rid of the minimum, and we're consistent throughout. Yes? Then I will be willing to accept a motion to adopt the proposed fee schedule to the Parks and Rec and Board of Supervisors as discussed, if somebody wants to make that motion. Okay, motion by Mrs. Howell. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Blackwood. Any further discussion?
One clarifying question? For the group reservations, I understand the 10 lane. Is that also for a 4-hour time period?
Yes.
I just want to make sure.
Yes.
Okay.
We're consistent throughout. Yes. Okay. Any further discussion?
Can I ask one further question? I'm sorry.
Absolutely. It's better to
There was
right
a requirement
now.
That you had to make a reservation within X number of days before your event. Is that, that's not discussed anywhere on the fee schedule. Is that going to come later? Because at one point, I want to say it was like a 30-day requirement. I hope that that's gone away.
We can put a minimum.
Jennifer Budge, Parks and Recreation Director. So for the rest of the park system, it's typically 30 days because we have to schedule so many things around. We have, you know, almost 500 reservations at our park facilities a year, so we have to have that out. For a facility like this, we can accommodate less. I think once we get this in place, we'll probably refine that in, like, our operational procedures. But we want to be able to accommodate use. We want this used all the time. So that's definitely our goal.
No further discussion?
So in clarification on the schedule, it says that they have to be at least 5 days prior to your event. You're now going to change that to 30 days?
No, we're not changing it to 30 days.
Okay.
That's what his question was.
Okay.
So he's understanding that if it's 15 days or less before the event, then your fee is non-refundable.
That's right. So if you don't make it till 5, right, that's right. Then you have non-refundable.
Yeah.
So, correct. Okay.
Well, yeah, but they're the ones who's making the reservation.
Excuse me. Thank you. So all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Are you opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you all for your good work. I know it was a grind to go through each of the items, but I think we ended up with a better product for that. We're going to move on to agenda item 4A. Ms. Budge, may we please have the director's report?
Thank you, Madam Chair. A lot to report to you. We've been very busy and some good positive things to report to you as well as some challenges and some good conversations with the Department of Wildlife as we move forward. So first and foremost, I'd like to announce that we'll be expanding our public hours effective August 13th. We'll be open Tuesday through Friday evenings from 5:30 till 8 p.m. We will clear the range at 7:45, though, just so we can make sure we can close up the facility. Some nights we will have range safety officers provided through our park rangers, and sometimes we will not. We'll do our best to have someone there as much as possible, but we do have limited staff. We'll still have Sundays available from 7 in the morning till 7 at night. Any questions on that?
And the hours, please.
I'm sorry. So it's starting August 13th. So right now, I just want to point out we have Wednesday and Thursday evenings available. This is consistent with the hours that we're operating on those nights. So it'll be Tuesday through Friday evenings from 5:30 till 8 p.m. And Sundays from 7 in the morning till 7 at night. Okay, third time's the charm. So starting August 13th, Tuesdays through Fridays, the range will be open 5:30 to 8 p.m. Tuesdays through Fridays, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday evenings, and then Sundays will remain the same, 7 a.m. till 7 p.m. Okay? Any questions on that as we move forward? Okay. I did want to report that our engineering and design on the shooting bays was 100% complete. Loomis and Associates did a great job, and thanks to the Board of Supervisors for providing that $46,000 toward the funding for that purpose. We did receive quotes. We already went out to try to see what that was going to cost and move forward with that. Unfortunately, the lowest quote that came back was $143,000. Previously, I'm going to kind of go all over the place, but I promise it'll tie together, so just bear with me as I go through this. So previously, we submitted at the request of this task force a $38,000 grant to the Nevada Department of Wildlife for signage and for improvements to the shooting bays. And obviously, we were way off because after we didn't have design, we had nothing to go off of. Anyway, we've had some discussion. Aaron Keller obviously has been a huge help with us. We've discussed some options, and we'll bring Aaron into this conversation in a second, about possibly amending that first grant. What are our options? Can we increase that amount with the end game being that we, you know, construct and do those improvements at no cost to the city? That is definitely our goal, but we also want to move quickly as we can. We do have $250,000 available in this fiscal year's budget, but we also want to make sure that we can have our match available as we move forward with grants. There has been federal legislation that has changed the grant match requirements from 25% to 10%. But my understanding is that first grant that we submitted would still be subject to the 25% match. So we're really trying to just leverage every penny that we have and being as thoughtful as we can. We've talked about possibly having that design that we're currently funding right now as potential match for either the first grant or the second grant as well. And Aaron's been very open and supportive of trying to pursue what options we have for that. And then we'll be done just within the next week or so for 100% design for the rest of the range. So we'll have everything we need ready to go out to bid when we need to. And so we can stand ready for that based on the timing with Department of Wildlife and the grant funding available. And I just want to thank Aaron again for his support. He's been a really big supporter of our range. We all have the same goal. We all want to do improvements, and we all want to increase public hours and get the facility back open. And we know we want our facility to meet those recommended standards, the minimum recommended standards by the NRA, and we really want a safe, fun, enjoyable facility for people. So I thought maybe I'd open up for Aaron, and we could talk about timelines and what our options might be. I don't want to put him on the spot and make him commit to anything, but I think we need to talk about this because timing and improvements will depend on funding. And we do have some challenges with that $143,000 quote that we received because we didn't anticipate it to be over $100,000. We didn't account for prevailing wage. So those quotes didn't include that. And in the last legislature, prevailing wage went down, which means the city's costs go up. So we could add, 30 to 35% to that cost based on prevailing wage, and that's a state law. So we cannot go around that. We need to make sure we're doing everything by the book.
Mr. Keller?
Sorry.
Ann Keller, Department of Wildlife, for the record. I think Jen pretty much summed up our discussions as far as grant funding pretty well. The way our process works is early in the year, you kind of come up with your projects or what you want to get done that year. And I think we did a good job of kind of just picking one, right? And so some range signage, some dirt work, things like that, that we knew we were going to have to do anyway. Obviously, the market in Nevada, Northern Nevada, well, all of Nevada is going crazy right now. So everything's coming in higher. We've had, I think we're funding 9 ranges this year, and all 9 of them have come in higher than what they thought they would be. And part of the problem is that we ask for quotes early in the grant process, and then as the companies get busy, they add on a little bit more. But this one in particular is that it goes over the $100,000 mark, which means prevailing wage, which means more money. So we have, this is where we're going to kind of need to balance where we go at or from here with this grant funding, is that we asked for round numbers, $40,000 to kind of get the project moving. Now we're looking at 140 without prevailing wage, which, add on 30 to 35, 40%, depending on the contractor, could get pretty expensive. So we need to, whether or not we want to hold off and maybe shoot for the moon, or if we want to just keep the project going and get some dirt moving and kind of get some of these bays opened back up and a little bit safer, that's where it'll be kind of up to us to decide, or up to the city, kind of how they want to proceed. There is funding. The next grant cycle that will be coming open will get the 90-10 split, so which means 10% of the funds will need to be matched by the grantee. Makes it a lot easier. Makes it a lot easier to go for bigger projects, but the bigger the project, the more headaches because of the bidding process and the prevailing wage and everything else that comes into play. Also, Jen asked when we could start applying for that next grant cycle, and it is normally in the winter, but if we're in an ongoing kind of project, we can amend some grants for longer time. In the past, we've only done 1 or 2 year grants, and now with this, the new recreational shooting amendment, it lets us go out to 5 years. so we can have a five-year grant now, which is a long time and usually too long for this type of project, but it accounts for any hiccups or any bureaucracy that the city or the county or, you know, they need to go through. And then also because it's federal money and state money, we need to make sure that we're checking all the boxes with time frames and bid cycles and things like that. So, but I mean, we're on board. We want to see the Carson City Rifle Range, you know, the gem of the county and the gem of the area, because I think it's a great opportunity for us to showcase how safe shooting can be, showcase how one, the Nevada Department of Wildlife is putting back into these communities for safe shooting and giving back to recreational shooters. But then also it gives the city the opportunity to use this in-kind match, which is the volunteer hours. Mr. Hillis brought up that, you know, a volunteer's time has a rate. It does. You can use that value for in-kind match. And it's, if they're running heavy equipment out over there, it's $40 or more an hour. And it with prevailing wage, as long as you show fair market value, you can value those people a lot higher. So I think it's important for us to kind of keep all that in mind as we move forward. And just make sure we're dotting our I's and crossing our T's as far as auditing goes. The federal government could come back in and say, what'd you do with this money? And we want to see where you put it. And we want to make sure that we're, rather than pushing it through, I think we should come up with a plan, like Jen said, come up with the design of what we're going to do. And I think Mr. Blackwood's probably going to talk about long-term planning in his report later, and just make sure that we're all on the same page and we're putting in the money in the right place.
So, Mr. Keller, when potentially would the grant we already applied for, when could we get a notice to proceed? How far out are we that you think the first grant would actually be awarded so we could work on bays if we...
Right. Thank you for the question. The original grant was for round numbers, $40,000. I think it was a little bit less than that, but $40,000. I talked to my grants coordinator yesterday, and he was looking through all that. So he's looking through environmental compliance, the location of the project, the relationship to other grants. There's a few things he's got to check off of his list, and then after that he'll give us his award. Or he actually gives his recommendation to their fiscal department, and then they make the award letter. So it could come while we're sitting here. It's hard.
We're in the final stages.
I talked to him for an hour and 50 minutes yesterday and almost 2 hours on last Friday, just about shooting ranges. So he's looking at them right now, and I'm constantly giving him maps and things like that. Jen did a great job and her staff on preparing their application. So, I mean, he had very few questions about what was going on at Carson City. It's just that when we submit our grant, we sometimes lump grants together. So there's multiple grants under one umbrella, if that makes sense.
At my end.
So Carson City is a low risk grant application. So we've worked with Carson City before. We have a good relationship. They know our process. We know theirs. So we actually put that under the core hunter education grant, which means that there's a little bit more eyeballs looking at it because it's a lot bigger grant, rather than parting it out by itself, which leaves itself open a little more microscope, I guess.
Right.
So as soon as all those other questions get answered, then it'll be rolling forward with four different grants at one time.
Thank you.
Yep.
Okay. Do you have a further report, Ms. Fudge?
Yeah, I have one last announcement. Thank you, Madam Chair, or two, actually. So our position, the range coordinator, should be open by the end of the week. It'll be posted. You can go to carsoncity.org, go to the human resources page. I encourage people to apply, and we've been working really hard to get a good job description and make sure it meets all of the needs that we've talked about here. Someone that can provide, you know, education over enforcement and really try to help, especially the general public in improving, you know, proper shooting behavior. So that's definitely the focus of the position, but they'll be able to do maintenance. We have anything and everything in that job description, so we can hopefully utilize their skills the best way possible. So that'll
question
be...
Question on that, Madam Chair, if I could.
Certainly, Mr. Robinson.
Post-trained, post...
They will not propose certified, no.
Okay.
They will be part of the Parks and Recreation Department operating to the park operations superintendent. Both of the park rangers report to him right now to be consistent within the department. So I just want to thank the Board of Supervisors, though, for allocating a full-time position with benefits. To get any staff added to any department is very rare, so we appreciate the support. And then we've created an email address. It's ccrange.org. And so any volunteer waivers that you need to send in, any questions you have, we have a dedicated email address now. And we'll have multiple people sort of manning it, so you never know who's gonna who's going to answer, but we'll make sure we have the right person answer your questions. But just one consistent place to be able to send your, especially your waivers for those group uses out on the range.
And that was ccrange?
ccrange.org. We'll send out an email out to everybody clarifying that. I just got IT to get that going this week, so.
And then just to remind everyone, I know there's been a lot of public discussions in forums and things, but if you want any official information about the range, Jennifer, would you give them the website to obtain the official Carson City information on the range?
Yeah, if you go to carsoncity.org or carson.org, and you go to the parks pages, there's a dedicated page for the range. We put all of our minutes from this meeting. We have the operating hours, all of the public meetings that we held, the maps. Everything is all located on that one page. And if there's any questions or concerns or if we're missing something on there, just let us know and we'll get it corrected. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, my mic went off. Okay. So we'll move on to item five. Mr. Girawani, do you have any further reports?
My discussion was regarding the fees, but I'm satisfied.
We've done it. Same with mine. We covered it underneath the fundraising portion of the fees. And again, I want to thank you, Mr. Girawani, for all your efforts in helping us get that done. Thank you. Mr. Blackwood, do you have a report?
Yes, I do, as a matter of fact. Two things, actually. The first one is I ran into a couple of interesting young ladies the other day who are dedicated shooters. And one of the things that came out of the conversation is that they said new gun ranges of the future should not be like the old gun ranges of the past. And I said, what does that mean? And said, well, the old gun ranges of the past included a sagebrush as part of your potty stop. And that cannot any longer be part of the kind of gun ranges that we want to attend. In addition to that, when you have families, it'd be nice if you had a little park out there, a playground, so that mom could bring the kids out while dad went shooting. Or vice versa, dad could watch the kids while mom went shooting. But they said we need to have a modernized shooting range, not the typical dingy, dirty, grungy, outhouse-infested gun ranges that we've all grown up with and have thought were just fine. So they're now calling them concierge shooting facilities. So in your budget planning, Aaron, you can add another $10 million to our request, please. Thank you very much. The second thing is a couple of weeks ago, I took a road trip searching for properties where the new range could be located. And the area that I concentrated on was east of the, what they call it, the American Parkway, the road that goes from 50 up to the industrial park, and between there and Highway 95, north of Highway 50, that region. There are some very interesting canyons and valleys up there that could result in a very admirable shooting facility. The additional benefit to it is that there's a power line that runs right through the middle of it, so we have electricity. The other part of it is coming in off of Highway 50, there's already a decent road. So this, I just want to add this to our list of places to look. I haven't had the opportunity yet to visit the area just east of the golf course, where you guys have some possible access and some possible problems. I haven't been in there. I tried to get in there twice and it was blocked. So if I can't get in there, well, I'll fly in. But I need to look at that. But there is some suitable locations out between the Parkway, Highway 95, north of 50.
Thank you very much. Okay, we're going to move on to agenda item number 6, which deals with any future agenda items that we think needs to come before. Does anyone have any outstanding issues that we haven't, that you think we haven't covered?
Madam Chair, I have a future agenda item for consideration. The Carson Rifle and Pistol Club, prior to the closure of the range, was working on a system to improve target stands. And the club constructed 30 concrete bases. These bases hold targets, just two-legged targets that are 24 inches on center. So it's a standard style IPSC kind of start target, and or it could be square, and they could tape their targets to it. Simply, we're offering these to the city if it's possible to incorporate it into the design, potentially on maybe the short-range bays or the pistol bays. And I have some information regarding them if any of the task force would like to see that. Again, we're simply offering them on behalf of the club to be incorporated. So I'd be happy to hand these out and then for a future consider.
Okay. Does anybody else have anything for a... So just then to let you know, we'll be happy to... take a look at this and determine whether we actually need that as an agenda item for the task force versus we just see if we can make use of them and incorporate it. We'll have to take a look at what you're suggesting there. So since I didn't receive any future agenda items, then just to let you all know, future meetings then would just be at the call of the chair if something arose during the design stage or the planning, something that was an unintended, you know, then we wouldn't have a regularly scheduled. So I just want to let you know, since I think we've overall met the requirements that we had as the charge of this committee, and so, but I would leave it open as a call in case, like I said, not that we're going to have any hiccups in anything, but, you know, just potentially. I think I saw a hand that will go up on something.
Madam Chair.
Oh, so.
With all the open meeting laws, when is this going to be presented to the board? And do we know what date we're going to look to have this effective?
It has to go to the Parks and Rec Commission. So do we make it in time for that next agenda, or do we have to wait to the next one? Do we have enough time to get it in?
We just completed the agenda, the packet. I just sent it to Ben yesterday. We could probably incorporate that in that.
I think it would be helpful if we can, because the Park and Rec...
Your motion to both boards?
Hmm?
Was your motion for the fee schedule to both boards? Okay,
yes.
I just want to make sure.
Yes.
Okay.
And then so I think if we can get that in the Parks and Rec,
so
that will give strength when it goes to the Board of Supervisors.
On August 20th?
Right.
In this room at 5:30.
August 20th.
Correct.
And this is the Parks and Rec.
So it's the Parks and Recreation Commission.
So that,
and that'll miss the Board of Supervisors deadline for the last meeting in August and won't
It'll go to the first one in September then.
Yeah, it's already too late for the August 15th
right.
board
right.
meeting
That's
anyway.
The 15th.
Yeah, it's already too late for that. So we would go to the board in September.
Right.
First meeting in September.
Mm-hmm.
Assuming there's no issues with the Parks and Rec Commission, I don't want to make promises in advance of a meeting
right.
that hasn't happened. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody? Mr. Tussey?
Yeah, when could we reasonably start collecting money?
When could we reasonably start collecting money? We are going to wait to see the answers on the design with the grant with Mr. Keller. That's kind of why I was trying to pin him down with a date. So, again, I don't think we can promise, but it'll take us a little while to get all envelopes and put out notices for people to do sponsorships and things of that nature. So I think at the Park and Rec Commission and then at the board level, we can discuss the actual implementation date because we need some of these other answers from our wonderful friend that's nodding at me. So I can't really, I'm with Jennifer on this, that I really don't want to promise something, because I think we need to have it open to the public. I don't want to start with the Tuesday through Friday nights, and the when we can have something truly open, then we'll work on that. So I'll let you know on that website that Ms. Budge discussed. We will post all the updates on that as it's going, so that everyone's informed. Yes. Okay, then we're going to move to what final public comment. Any members of the public who wish to address the task force can come forward and speak. And again, 3 minutes, and please I put your name on the record. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and this committee members. For the record, my name is Monica Jay. I'm a talk show host on 99.1 FM, and I deal with local issues. Recently, a transcript, an unofficial transcript of my show from last week, was sent to members of this task force. And I say unofficial because we do not provide transcripts of my show. This was not sent to me. This was not given to me in any form. And I would ask, Madam Chair, that you please send me a copy so I can verify what is in it, that it is accurate and truthful. And I would also like to make the statement that anybody is welcome to call into my show and address concerns. That's what it's there for. I do have a number of concerns with the Carson Range. First off, starting with the aforementioned website that was given. You have a lot of confusion from people because your website currently has that it is open and that it is free to attend, and it has the hours. If it is closed, then that should be updated that it is closed so people don't come down. And I would like to thank especially Aaron and the group for pointing out I live in South Reno. The Carson Range is the only one that I like to go to because it is so close to my home. And to pay $10 for my husband and I, because I never go shooting alone, I always have someone with me, $20 to go to a Carson Range when I can go to Washoe for $18, which provides nice restrooms, vending machine for food and water. That is where I would prefer to go. So thank you for lowering their prices and looking into that. Also, I'm a president of a nonprofit, and when I see things going through your schedule determined by director, I have issues with that, that you have a lot of different personalities out there that get involved with things, and I would just set things in stone. Do not let the actions of one person go over another just because they are the director of an organization. It is open to the public. There needs to be something set in stone for if people come down and have group shooting, cleanups, anything like that. Also concerning hearing, if you have people that come out to the range, maybe they're deaf, maybe they're like me and they wear glasses. I do not wear shooting glasses. I bring my own protection. Any responsible shooter is. For Parks and Rec to provide shooters hearing protection really should not be involved, because now you take the responsibility of cleaning it, of storing it, of providing it. You would be much better off to have a safety shooter pamphlet that can be given to people by your volunteers and give them just a little pair of earbuds that you can buy in bulk for just pennies. Everything else, it's really getting beyond the means of something that we all want to enjoy. Right now, responsible shooters.
Thank you so much. I'm so sorry I have to go to the 3 minutes. And
no, that's perfectly fine.
Thank you for your good comments.
Christy Scott, resident of Carson City. I'm going to say this. I really appreciate all the efforts here, but we're now 9 months into a closed range. A closed range that was closed because someone heard the bullets. There were no trajectory studies done. There were no ballistic studies done. Someone heard the bullets, heard three ricochets, heard three bullets, and then closed the range. It is ridiculous that it's still closed. my business has lost money, and all I've heard here today is not about how to open the range, but how to charge everybody for a range that is closed. That's very, very frustrating. When you can't answer the questions about the fact that we only use the range for an hour and a half to do CCW classes. Thank you, Carol. Why would I book for 4 hours? I would book for 3 hours sometimes because I don't know exactly when I'm going to get there. It depends upon whether or not the people that I'm training are quick to learn or whether they're slow to learn. I use the range maybe an hour and a half. If I'm going to pay $80 out of, let's say I only have two people that day, I charge $100 for veterans to do my class. So I'm going to pay you guys 50% of what I have to pay for 10 minimum shooters. You guys are killing my business. I'm a small business in Carson. The first weekend you guys closed the range, I lost over $2,000 in ammunition. Now you're going to talk about selling target stands and selling, and I'm sorry, maybe it's not target stands, but selling eye and ear protection and everything else. When I fully stock my store with, I went into that 4,000 square foot store 2 miles from the range because it's my business. I'm right there. But you're going to take business away from me by providing ear protection, eye protection, target stands, 1x2s, all of which are in my store, and that's why I went there. You guys are not in the business of retail. I am. I'm still going to say this. There is nobody on this task force that owns a Carson City business that deals with this. Terry's business is in Lyon County. Bob's out of Reno. So there's nobody that does that, and instructor on here. And we could have said, you know, these fees are outrageous for us. You guys are going to have a really hard time based upon the customers that I get getting people to come back out to the range, honestly. They are disgusted, they're tired of it, and they've all found different places to go. So I think even talking about a fee schedule while you've got all these people here, when the range isn't even back open, is just, I think it's outrageous. I think it's ridiculous, and that's all I've got to say today. And other than I am absolutely disgusted that the person that you're doing this rifle and pistols club stuff with sent a transcript with my name all over it and threatened me with the district attorney. So I will be checking into that myself. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Scott. Do we have any further public comment? Come on up. Sorry, it needs to be green because she'd left it on. So if you push the button, and there you go, you're green.
Hi, Nathan Marcucci, just public citizen at large. I was noticing that the Carson Rifle and Pistol Club, they don't take comments on their Facebook page. In fact, they delete them, and nothing's open for comment. And so it's kind of frustrating. That's an entirely different point of view. It's actually extremely frustrating because, you know, I don't belong to it, and I don't feel that they always represent my views. But my question especially is, a couple Saturdays ago, they had an open shoot just for anybody in their club. And, you know, I feel it's kind of not fair since, you know, Sunday's my day to go to church. Sunday's my day to spend with my family. So Saturday, you know, if they had the time, why not open it up to the public, I guess? I don't know. It feels a little unfair.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any further public comment? Come on
up. Hi, my name's Ron Barterson. To answer your question about why you might want to have covered and uncovered, you have two examples sitting here. Mr. Hillis is able to lay down prone and compete in a match, but Mr. Tussie is not. And that's typically why we split between the covered and uncovered, is because somebody needs to sit at the benches that are there. That's the reason for doing it, just to let you know.
Thank you so much.
You've got a fee schedule, and you've complained about education problems for shooters, but you haven't put any incentives in your fee schedule for education. You should really consider a lower cost for anybody that's completed a year class in practical shooting there. So they actually have to come out and see what they need and what they can do. You should really consider that. That's you're going to be your return. Your biggest problem is the public doing things they shouldn't. They're not getting educated. A person that's running the range on a weekend can't spend a lot of time with a single individual. when they've got the entire range to take care of. That's very difficult. Public is very, very difficult than dealing with your little group. And if you don't think so, supply RSOs for one Sunday a week, month, and find out what it's really like. We have an increasing problem. I'm part of the Concussion Rifle and Pistol Club. We have an increasing problem with the number of volunteers shrinking. You know, we're going to have trouble in the future. Let's see. I'm covered. I wonder if you've really thought about some of the changes you're making to the long range. You're taking out two berms that are there for safety reasons, the ones at 100 and 200 yards. They're there to cut off all the low angle possible ricochets, which are the primary source that are going to make it over the hill. Your big berm at the back, you've already got a big berm at the back. It's that mountain. If that berm at the back was going to make some difference, the mountain would have made some difference. You're getting out of the range in high-angle trajectories. Low angles of incidence are going to contribute to that. That's why we keep saying shooting at the ground causes it. You need to put this berms in at 100 and 200 yards. Finally, we've had a continuing problem with having a clean porta-potty. In fact, we heard something just recently about that. And we constantly complain about it. Nothing is getting done. Maybe it's time to start publicizing that with YouTube videos. We'll show you what it's really like.
Thank you, Ron. Your 3 minutes is up, but I appreciate those comments, and we'll look into them. Thank you. Is there any further public comment?
See, green light.
You're green.
Okay. I'm a Carson City resident. My name is David Morton. And I'm sitting here listening to all the concerns about funding and everything. But one revenue source that we had down when I lived in California, I'm not a native resident of Nevada. I moved here in 2010. We had a range that we built down there in a town called Ridgecrest. And it was a very nice range. It's over 600 acres. We've got public range. We've got at least five private club ranges, all centered in one spot. A lot of that money that was volunteer, but there was also a big contribution to the Friends of the NRA. I'm hearing nothing about any type of submission for funding from the NRA or the Friends of the NRA. I know they do funding for city-type projects. They have a separate submission. So I'm confused on that because I know down in Ridgecrest, they were donated from the Friends of the NRA over $200,000 for range improvements. That's a big chunk of money. Other than that, just expressing my frustration over the hours and the lack of being open for me because I'm not part of any of the current clubs. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Morton. We appreciate your comments. And just so that you know, we did apply for a grant with the NRA and got turned down. So not that we might not do more of them.
We did receive, Madam Chair, Jennifer Budge, Parks and Recreation Director, we did receive funds from the NRA Foundation.
From the foundation, right. So
that funded all the new signs that are out there right now.
So we do look at that funding source. So just to let you know, if you have any other suggestions or anyone else, if someone were missing to ask for money, please don't hesitate to let us know. Okay. Do we have any more public comment? Okay. All right, so we have no further public comment. Then if there's no objection, we're on item 8. We will adjourn. No, any objections? Okay. Then we're adjourned, and thank you all very much.